This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm Scott Tetley, and my co-host with me tonight is John Nelder. On tonight's edition of The Informer, day two of the return of federal parliament, and we are none the wiser regarding the path to marriage equality. However, another organisation has come out in support. They have written to all MPs urging them to address the issue of marriage equality sensitively and swiftly. We'll catch up with Megan Holden from Berry Street to discuss this further.
Today marks the commencement of the Adoption Amendment Act, which allows adoption by same-sex couples within the state of Victoria. However, what does that mean for our community? And what is the practical reality of this?
We'll also catch up with more US news from Huffington Post's Queer Voices editor right here on The Informer. Many opponents of same-sex marriage suggest we need to think of the children. By adding this concern, the underlying assumption is that same-sex marriage is damaging to the welfare of children. This week, Berry Street, an organisation that exists to advocate and support children in providing for safety, stability, love and support, have come out in support of marriage equality. Joining us on The Informer is Megan Holden, who is the Regional Director, South Eastern Area, from Berry Street. Good evening, Megan.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, thank you. Now, your organisation has the welfare of children front and centre. So
Yes. Tell
us, why have you come out in support of marriage equality?
Well, for a couple of reasons. We obviously feel that this is an important social discussion, and it's on a very public platform. And I guess as an organisation, you know, we hold the position of celebrating diversity and supporting the human rights of LGBTI people. But we also recognise the really damaging impact of discrimination and how important marriage equality is to the physical and mental health of not just LGBTI people, but their children and their families. And I guess we were really concerned about the message that this debate sends to LGBTI young people and children of same-sex parents and our staff and our same-sex carers and their families. So we felt that, you know, as a children, youth and families organisation, it was important, firstly, for us to be clear on our position, but that we had a responsibility in the community to lend a voice of support.
Now, with that responsibility, and I opened up talking about, caring about the children, which is a lot of what the opponents of same-sex marriage sort of say. Have you had any sort of feedback, and, you know, how did you navigate sort of this? You know, you're an organisation that's quite out there with being inclusive and supporting of our community.
Yeah, we are. And, you know, people listening to Joy might be familiar with us, and we've been involved directly with the LGBTI community for several years, providing opportunities for LGBTI people to become foster carers. And we also supported the same-sex adoption campaign. We've been in Pride and everything else. So, we started talking about same-sex marriage leading up to the federal election. You know, it was a very hot topic. And I guess for us, it came down to a few bottom lines. That we do believe that supporting same-sex marriage or marriage equality is in the best interest of all children, and that we do think, as we say in our statement, we think it's the right thing to do, and we support the right of all Australians to marry, you know, a partner of their choice, but that also, really importantly, that the message that all children should know and feel is that love is what makes a family.
Hi, Megan, it's John here in the studio. Look, I couldn't agree more with those sentiments there. But what do you say to opponents of marriage equality who say that same-sex marriage is not in the best interest of children? I mean, where are these people coming from, and where are they getting the research from, do you think?
Well, I think the research, you know, that can be debated. There's the to and for and against research. As I said, you know, our position is that love is what's important. You know, when a child feels loved and supported and cared for and listened to and nurtured, they thrive. That's what we know. And that doesn't come down to whether there's necessarily a mother and a father or two fathers or two mothers or single parents. There's a lot of single parent families, and the kids do amazing. And so we don't believe it's about the traditional family model. It's about love.
And look, now that the board has an agreed position around marriage equality, and you've sent a letter about it to every federal MP, I was just wondering if you've had any feedback from those letters or how well it's been received so far from MPs?
We haven't had a response from MPs. We did have a fantastic response from Commissioner Roe Allen, who we work with and very supportive of Berry Street, and we're very supportive of the work that she does. And she was really, really pleased that, you know, that we have come out in support of marriage equality.
And beyond the media release, is there anything else that you're doing or planning on doing in this area in regards to the support going forward?
Yeah, we are. We, you know, as I said, we've been doing work over the years, but we've just established a diversity and inclusion steering committee within our organisation, looking at diversity and inclusion broadly and what that means in Berry Street. And as part of that, we're developing our first LGBTI working group to look at the experience of our staff and our carers and our young people. And we've just started working with Pride and Diversity, which is a fantastic organisation, to help us undertake some of that work. And we're also starting to work towards our Rainbow Tick accreditation. So there's a lot of work happening.
What do you think such a public stand is important to the people that you work with in this area?
I think that what we know is that children learn from what's around them, which is why we're concerned about the nature. You know, racist, sexist and homophobic attitudes are learnt by children, what they see and what they hear around them, and the messaging is really, really important. And what the message that this debate is saying is that it's okay to discriminate against people based on who they love, and we don't believe that that's okay. And this point's particularly important for children who are growing up with same-sex parents. You know, the message that they get is that their parents' love and that their parents' relationship is perhaps less than other kids at their school or their friends who have heterosexual parents. So, again, you know, we feel we have a responsibility to balance that argument.
And Megan John here again in the studio. Look, do you think, does Berry Street have an opinion on the plebiscite?
Yeah, well, I think that the key thing for us is that, you know, that the...
Megan, I think we might be dropping out your mobile reception, and I think, hello.
Hello?
Okay, I think we've missed all of that.
I'll just go back there.
Yeah, so what is the official policy of you guys, or do you have an opinion in regards to the plebiscite?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, our key message there is that the government needs to address the issue of marriage equality quickly, as we say in the statement, not drag it out. I think dragging it out becomes more and more damaging. But to do it in a way that really promotes respect and social harmony and the well-being of the LGBTI community.
One of your things was about sensitivity and swiftly. What does that mean?
I think that, you know, what we don't want to see is a damaging, negative, aggressive debate. You know, we don't want to see those messages sent to not only children but the community more broadly. You know, it can be very difficult not only for children but for adults, for members of the LGBTI community to constantly hear that negativity, and there's potential in the debate for that to only increase and incite, you know, violence and hurtful attitudes.
And what do you think, if we actually go ahead of with the plebiscite, and, you know, who knows? It's like, you know, every day the story is sort of, you know, changing but then also staying the same. If the government ends up going ahead and they, you know, Labor sort of gives in and does allow it, you know, what will that mean for Berry Street in regards to the support services and your sort of, you know, your role in the community?
We're really clear that if that was to go ahead, we will be very conscious of the well-being of our young people, and also our carers and staff, because of the potential damage that it has to their well-being, to their mental health, to their physical health, and we'll need to ensure that we're providing the right messages and the right support and awareness to all members of the Berry Street community and the community more broadly.
Megan Holden, thank you so much for what you're doing at Berry Street and for joining us here on The Informer tonight. And I presume that was a thank you because the mobile reception there. We got through it, though, didn't we, John?
Absolutely.
Coming up next, we're going to be talking about the news that was happening today in regards to same-sex adoption becoming legal as of today here in Victoria. You're on Joy 94.9, The Informer. As reported in our news, today marks the commencement of the Adoption Amendment Act in Victoria. And according to Felicity Marlow, the co-convener of Rainbow Families Council, she said earlier today that adoption equality will mean hundreds of Victorian children will be afforded the rights and legal protections they deserve. Now, Felicity will be on tonight's Family Matters at 8 p.m. right here on Joy 94.9. But also in today's announcement was a gay dad who, through surrogacy, and he is the co-convener of Gay Dads Australia, Rodney Chain. Cruz, welcome to Joy 94.9.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Tell us, Rodney, what's your reaction to today's announcement?
Look, I think it's a great step forward. I mean, we're a little bit behind the other states, but it's a great step forward for LGBTI people in Victoria that now we're afforded the same rights in regard to adoption equality as our heterosexual counterparts. But it's not all good news. We were hoping that we may see some changes with regard to how gay dads who did surrogacy overseas may be able to have their parental rights recognised in Victoria. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen.
Just before that, can I just ask, you are a gay dad, you know, through surrogacy. How did that come about?
Oh, about 10 years, my partner and I decided that we wanted to become parents. And we undertook surrogacy in the USA, and we have a 9-year-old son now, Ethan. And, yeah, so that's how we started, and that's how around about the same time Gay Dads Australia started. But we also, you know, we came back to Australia knowing full well that our son was arriving back in Australia without any legal parents. And to this day, he still doesn't have any legal parents. And unfortunately, the Adoption Act reforms, however welcome they are in a whole range of other areas, they're not actually going to be of much assistance to us directly or to any other gay dad who has done surrogacy overseas.
So what does that actually practically mean? So does that mean birth certificates, passports? Like, how did you get him back into the country and then...
Well, it's quite a complex process, but... essentially, even though our son doesn't have legal parents in Australia, the government, the federal government, has recognised that it is an issue, and they have worked with same-sex families over the years to ensure that we can get passports, that we can get citizenship for our child, and that our children are able to travel and go to school and get medical attention, etc., without any problems. But the reality is that there is no legal protection for those children, and should the parents die or separate, that's when this lack of legal recognition for the kids becomes very apparent.
Could you have gone down the adoption path if it was available?
If it was available to us in Victoria back then, we would have loved to have done it. We looked at it. We looked at, you know, the options of adoption, and it wasn't available to same-sex couples then. But the other reality was that there actually aren't very many children to adopt. I think last year there was less than 30 in Victoria that were adoptions that went through. And there's, I think, around about 40,000 people on the waiting list. So even though we have adoption equality as of today in Victoria, if there's couples out there thinking, okay, we're going to go and adopt a child, the chances of them actually adopting is extremely low, simply because we just don't have the number of children to adopt. There's just so little of them. However, if they wanted to do foster care with your guest before from Berry Street, they are always looking for wonderful gay and lesbian people to go and parent via foster care system.
So while today's announcement is, you know, is certainly welcomed, you know, it's breaking down, you know, those areas of discrimination, The practical impact? What do you see as the practical impact?
Well, there are going to be hundreds of kids in Victoria and their families. They're finally going to be able to avail themselves of adoption laws and get legal recognition. And there's a whole range of family structures where that will apply. So I think there's a huge advance there. Those families are winners today. They've got an avenue for legal recognition. So those kids are going to be protected by law by having legal parents. And that's a great win. And it's a great win for equality. And it sends a very strong message to the community that our families are real, they're valid, and they need just as much protection as anybody else's family. But there still will be a large number of gay men, primarily gay men, who have done surrogacy overseas that exist in this legal limbo where they can't get the protection that legal parentage provides for the children. Now, I should say that this is not necessarily the state government's fault. We've been working with them to try and work through a pathway so we can change this. But it's the problem comes because it's a combination of federal and state laws. And, you know, the chance of us is getting anything changed at a federal level is really, really low. We've got a really positive and progressive government in Victoria, but we don't have one in Canberra. And it's that smash between the federal and state which causes the problem.
Hi, Rodney, John here from the studio. Look, if I could just stick on the state government for a little while there. I know that same-sex adoption is already available in New South Wales, the ACT and WA. So do you think there's any reason why Victoria has been a little bit late to the party on that?
Oh, look, that's a really good question. We're a progressive state, and we've been a progressive state for a long time.
Yep.
And back in the early 2000s, the Law Reform Commission in Victoria recommended that the laws be changed. But unfortunately, the Labor government back then and then the subsequent Bayou government refused to take up those recommendations. There's a right-wing element, there's a religious element that has been very anti spreading inequality. We're all aware of it. We're so aware of it now because of the plebiscite. It's just in our faces all every day. So it was a bit slow, but we've got there in the end, and I think we've got there with goodwill from both sides of Parliament. Okay, well, there was a few hiccups with regard to the religious exemptions, which we're not happy about, but essentially both sides of Parliament supported this adoption law reform, and that's a very important thing, a very important message that sends to the community that we're not just, it's not just a left issue or a right issue, it's an issue of community. And so we might have been late, but we have got there. So I'm very pleased about that.
So, Rodney, where to now? Especially given that we may get marriage equality now this year, or maybe 3 years down the path.
I think the view of most gay and lesbian parents is that the next period of time is protecting our families, protecting our kids. We're scared of a plebiscite. We know what's going to happen. We know from looking at today's news, we know that they're going to attack our children. They are attacking our children, and it scares us. I have a 9-year-old who's seeing this on the TV. He's hearing it in the classroom from friends and teachers. It's a discussion about his right to exist. It scares us. So I think our focus at the moment is protecting our kids. We don't want the plebiscite. And I think we're all willing to, we've waited this long for marriage. We'll wait a little bit longer if it protects our kids.
Yeah, there's certainly the path ahead is not very clear, and the word protection is so important. We started today, talking about, Berry Street and that whole thing about, protecting and supporting children. So we need to think about that. Rodney, thank you so much for joining us here on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for having me, guys.
No worries. That's Rodney Chang Cruz from Gay Dads Australia. Coming up next, we're going to go over to the US.
It's now time to check in with what's happening over in the USA with Huffington Post Queer Voices editor.
You're listening to The Informer. I'm Ruby Susan, joined by The Huffington Post Queer Voices Editorial Director Noah Mickelson. Thank you so much for joining us again, Noah.
Yeah, I love being here.
So what we could talk about was an article I saw on The Huffington Post recently about 15 of the absolute worst college campuses for queer youth via Campus Pride. So Campus Pride's an organisation that's gone around and formed lists of the best and worst universities for queer people. Is that the general idea?
Exactly. They do this every single year, and they base it on a whole bunch of different things, like the school's policies, what kind of clubs and things are available to queer students, the openness of the school to supporting queer students. So they take a look at all the different colleges and universities throughout the entire country, and then they make two different lists. One is their best of list, and one is their worst of list.
Oh, their shame list, as they've called it this year.
Exactly. And I think it is, in a way, some bad publicity for these schools in hopes that maybe they'll get their act together and they'll want to change. Unfortunately, a lot of these schools just don't care. So
I was going to say, a lot of private religious institutions there.
Exactly. So that's just baked into who they are. They're actually proud of that.
Yeah.
And so it's sad. But we do see that these lists actually do help. You know, the HRC here, the Human Rights Campaign, has a list, too, of businesses that do well in the community. And I think that, you know, businesses try and get on that list. And so they do try and make some changes. Hopefully a list like this for the universities will also have some kind of impact. Because we know that, especially young people, sometimes university and college is when they are learning who they are and they are really solidifying their identities. So it's important to be in a place that is supporting you. They can look through and they can say, oh, I want to go to this school. Let me check out the Campus Pride list and see how it ranks. You have a very easy way of telling whether or not you're going to be welcome there. So it's actually a very useful and very valuable tool.
Absolutely. Speaking of tools, we usually think of Democrats as the good guys over here in Australia. I've heard that there is a Democrat running in New York who is trying to erase pictures of gay couples in school textbooks. That seems like an interesting battle to pick for the Democrats.
Isn't that so weird? I don't think that he's representative of most Democratic people. So it kind of boggles my mind that this is what he's doing. But then when you look a little bit deeper into it, he is a very devoutly religious person. And so he's basing a lot of this stuff on religion, which, once again, when you start to add religion into the equation, all logic and reason go out the window. And sometimes, sadly, equality goes out the window, too. So I do not think this man is representative of how most liberal or Democratic people feel. But it's important to remember, too, that not all Democrats think the same way. Not all Republicans think the same way. We think of Republicans in the United States as being oftentimes anti-queer or at least more conservative when it comes to queer rights, but there are also some Republicans who are very pro-queer. So you do get the weird apples in the basket that just don't fit in.
What are his chances, do you think?
I don't think they're very good. I think more and more people are just, they're fed up with this kind of thing. They just think it's on the wrong side of history, especially the fact that he's trying to make this campaign to get rid of pictures of same-sex couples in textbooks and stuff. There's going to be a very small group of people who are going to be very excited about that idea because they're totally crazy too.
Yeah.
But I think the majority of people now think, no, this is just not where we're at in 2016.
Are there a lot of pictures of gay couples in textbooks now? Has something happened? Has there been like a reprint?
That's such a good point. No, there are hardly any. It's a weird battle to pick. This is the thing you're going to throw your weight behind. It doesn't make any sense. So I think you should wait 100 years when there actually are a lot of photos of queer couples in
books. Yeah, just put that on hold for 100 years. We'll get back. Right. On this final bit of pretty great news, the Golden Girls, one of the actresses, she bequeathed a lot of money to New York City's Ali Forney Center for Homeless LGBT Youth. And it sounds like they're about to open up a new center.
They are using the money that Bea Arthur, so she played Dorothy on the Golden Girls. It's a huge deal here, especially amongst the queer community. We love the Golden Girls. I probably have seen every single episode multiple times. And so Bea Arthur, who played Dorothy, she was a huge, huge ally to the community. And she left $300,000 to the Ali Forney Center, which is a center in New York just for homeless LGBT youth. We actually are good friends with them as well. We do a lot of stuff for them. We had a fundraiser a couple years ago for them. They do amazing work because they not only get kids off the street, but they also get kids into school and into job training programs so that they stay off the street, which is part of the equation that doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's just a shelter.
Yeah.
And the kid can stay there for a night. But if you can actually train them and you can actually educate them, then they become productive parts of society. So she donated all this money and now they're going to be able to use it to open up a new facility, which is amazing.
Well, it says in the United States, 40% of young people who are homeless are queer. So it's a huge proportion. I've also noticed that the Ali Forney Center has just reached its goal to look at purchasing Harlem's Atlanta World Missionary Church away from that anti-gay pastor, James David Manning, who says Starbucks flavors its lattes with gay semen. You've got some interesting types over there, Noah. You really do.
We really, really do. I know. But that is exciting, too. It would be nothing better than to see that church turned into a queer homeless shelter.
Kind of reminds me of the, what is it, the Happiness House that was bought opposite the West Bay Baptist Church?
The Equality House.
Exactly.
That's the thing. There's a lot of crazies out there and a lot of people doing really awful things, but there are also a lot of people doing really beautiful things.
I think we can all use some of those reminders, especially right now. Thank you so much again for joining us, Noah. It's a pleasure, as always,
Good
to
luck.
Have you.
It's a Thursday and almost the end of the week, so I thought I'd highlight what The Informer has covered this week. Remember, if you ever miss an episode, be sure to check out joy.org.au/The Informer because all of the podcasts are there. On Monday night, Ruby and Sarah tackled the very topical issue of the plebiscite. Tuesday night, the PrepX trial was covered in regards to the launching here in Victoria that's seen over 1,300 sign-ups in the last 6 weeks. And last night, Dean covered the Victorian Community Grants, Kathy Baldrick coming to Melbourne, plus International Overdose Awareness Day. And tonight, children and GLBTI families, adoption and marriage equality. Tonight's producer was myself with production assistance from John Nelder. Thank you to my guests today, Megan Holden from Berry Street and Rodney Chang Cruz from Gay Dads Australia. A full rundown on today's show will be on the Joy website shortly. For a podcast of today's program and any of our other stories, be sure to check out joy.org.au/The Informer. The Informer will be back on Monday evening at 6:30. I'm Scott Telly. Until next time, keep smiling.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.